This is the Saxo Market Call, daily insights on what is moving the financial markets.
Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It is Tuesday, 22nd of March, 2022. And we have a very interesting new statements from Fed Chair Powell in a speech yesterday that included a Q&A, and he's already coming out more hawkish than what we saw in last week's FOMC, indicating a 50 basis point rate hike is quite possible and likely at the next meeting, and even saying meeting or meetings, so indicating potential for multiple 50 basis point moves. And this has had the market forced to adjust to those expectations higher. So we're seeing the next meeting at the beginning of May and the one after that in June priced at above 40 basis points each now after this latest appearance. We saw the two-year U.S. Treasury benchmark jump over 20 basis points from where it was before this speech and the entire yield curve lifting. But this magical market is continuing, although it had a slightly negative day yesterday and for good reason as well, as oil prices notched another massive gain. And we've only had actually two daily closes in oil prices that are above the levels we saw this morning around 119 in per barrel in Brent crude. Market basically sideways. It sold off a little bit and only slightly lower on the day. We still note this very important resistance, the 200-day moving average in the S&P 500. You can see that on our little chart there on slide two. It is a continuous future chart warning. The actual cash level is a little bit higher than that. It's around 44.71 for the 200-day moving average. But above that, around 45.50 is a major Fibonacci level. And let's go to you, Peter, before I drag on too long with this. I'll have more to say, obviously, but pretty remarkable market, I think, given what is going on with this message from the Fed and not least oil prices. I think the Fed is going to hike until things break, and we'll talk about what that means a bit more with Altea as well. But what's your take on yesterday's session and what's going on here?
Yeah, I think we've put in on slide two the usual theme baskets, but it was you had that very good session again for defense and the commodity baskets. So that squarely puts them into the lead for the year to date. As you said, with the oil price rallying so much, and that was a big, I think, takeaway from yesterday's session is that you had Powell striking this very hawkish message, potentially going with 50 basis points already by May, and potentially already at the following meeting in June. That would be a very aggressive move. And as we discussed in the internal meeting, it almost seems like a 90-94 moment shaping up here if that becomes reality. And you had that rally in commodities, and in particular in Brent crude, and then you have the flattening of the yield curve. And taking all these things together, I think it was pretty remarkable to see the S&P 500 holding up so well as it did yesterday, and the market is not more spooked. And that takes me actually to slide three, because I like the way you're framing it, and like it hiking till it breaks. So two things. So the chart to the right here is the Chicago Fed's adjusted financial condition index. And the reason why we're putting it out here is because this is the workhorse that the Fed is using themselves to gauge where these financial conditions are. So they basically, these are measured against the economic backdrop. And as you can see here, we've just slightly moved above the 20-year average. The latest data point for this series is from the 11th of March. So I would presume that this index is already by now much closer to zero. And as I said to you, John, what's remarkable about these adjusted financial conditions index is that the current level is quite unusual given that we are still so close to a recent all-time high. And I will put in a devil's advocate here, because I ran the numbers yesterday in one of my equity updates. That's the slide to the left. So if you look at the effective Fed funds rate regimes, so if you take months where the Fed funds effective rate is going up versus unchanged or down, you're seeing these blue lines is when the Fed funds is rising. So the positive rate cycle has a very statistically significant excess return, both in nominal and real when you adjust for bond returns as well. So that's sort of the data that's out there. That's your statistical background to guide your prior. So in theory, we should be positive on equities. But as my title highlights here, I think this rate cycle is going to be very tricky for equities, because it's not really rhyming very well with what we have seen in the past. So maybe we should take these data points a little bit with a grain of salt.
I want to pick up on that point there in a moment, because I think actually the Fed may be actually specifically targeting asset prices as one of the things it wants to get down, something it certainly has not done so much before. But we need to get to you, Altea, because we have a very significant move in yields across the board, across the yield curve in the U.S. Where are you focusing here, both on what the Fed said and the moves we're seeing in the market?
Yeah, John, I think that a very important message from Powell yesterday is that the Federal Reserve is more likely to front load on interest rate hikes. And that's why he's talking about a 50 basis point rate hike in a meeting or meetings. That means that we are going to continue to see a bear flattening of the yield curve. There are many market participants that they say that the 2 years US treasuries have already bottomed, but the reality is that in terms of yields, there is still space for it to go upwards. And I'm going to take you on slide number 4, where I put the 2 year US treasury yields 1 year forward. And as you can see yesterday, they rose to 2.7%, the highest since 2018. That is basically matching the dot plot, which shows interest rate hikes to go beyond the terminal rate, the Fed terminal rate for 2023 and 2024. So it's safe to assume that there is still room for 2 years yields to move from where they are around 2.18% up to this level. And the 10-year yields in the meantime, as the economy is strong, to continue to soar as well. And today we are seeing them quite close to that resistance level at 2.35. Once they break that, they could rise to 2.5%. The only reason why I would see long-term yields falling is when we have a certain amount of information that the economy actually is going towards a contraction, which I don't think that we will have until the second part of the year or even the last part of the year. So far, the bear flattening trade is still intact.
Definitely. And that economic weakness is something we'll have to watch for. There's so many calls out there for recession, but something we may have gauged wrong and the market may be gauging wrong is how much that underlying inertia of the economy could yet follow through before we see that. And just the amazing degree of the resilience in this market is quite interesting. I just want to sort of go circle back a little bit to our point a minute ago about asset markets potentially being in the Fed's sights as it is seeking to tighten, because there was a great podcast out. Well, it was out recorded early last week, but I think it was out on Thursday. Macrovoices.com. I'll put that out on Twitter, a link to that podcast with Joseph Wong, a former Fed. He worked with the Fed on its open market operations team, basically, of course, that connected with QE. And he's talking about what the Fed is trying to do here. And I've actually used the phrase that he used as well. I'm not sure that I used it before anybody else. I'm quite sure I didn't. But the Fed really needs to hike until something breaks here. And that is the concept. And to his mind, these rate hikes don't have that much of an impact. His idea is that quantitative tightening is actually far more important because it requires a lot of reduction of the leverage in the system. And you have to unwind your holdings of various assets. And that's the part that really starts to hit on the asset market side, the quantitative tightening. And it gives just a good basic model of what we're facing here, that the U.S. Treasury net issuance will be, give or take, $1.5 trillion over the next 2 years, and that QT could take on the magnitude of a $1 trillion per year run rate. So you're talking about $5 trillion of reduction in liquidity and assets out of the system. Surely something breaks before those 2 years are accomplished. That's just to give a sense of the magnitude. Let's recall that back in the 2017 to 2018 cycle, the Fed rate hikes plus the withdrawal of only $700 billion on the quantitative tightening side was enough for the market to be screaming for mercy there by late 2018. We do also have, though, let's keep in mind, we have $1.7 trillion in the Fed's repo a facility that is simply money that could be let out theoretically without any further cost. So you can reduce that $5 trillion by $1.7 trillion there, but it's still a chunk of change to be, to say the least. And Wong making the point that he does believe that by impacting asset markets from housing, especially to also equities, this would help to tamp down on the sort of the part of consumption and heat in the economy that comes from the wealth effect, with a reverse wealth effect, you would get a lower growth rate. And that maybe would also help in not impacting the employment side, which is the traditional area where things go so bad in a recession. All right, too long of a soliloquy there. Let's get back to other things that might be breaking, and that is the Russian, default potential on Russian debt. Is there any update there? I'll tell you.
Well, we had another Russian sovereign bond with a coupon payment due yesterday, and it just arrived the communication from Russia saying that it paid $66 million worth in coupon on the euro dollar bonds. This bond in particular, John, was allowing payment in local currency. So Russia could have paid in rubles, but it didn't. At least that's what it says. So it seems that a default is again averted, but there are going to be much more interest payments coming up. So he's going to be interested to see what happens on this topic. But I'm going to take you on slide number 5, because when we talk about Russia and the risk of a default, we are also talking about a potential kind of systemic effect that could have on other emerging markets, which sentiment is linked to the one of Russia. And these countries are those that rely on remittances from Russia, or otherwise they are trade partners. And we're talking about countries such as Georgia, Pakistan, Sri Lanka, Egypt, and even Turkey. So what slide number 5 shows you is that the cost to insure emerging market has risen dramatically. Basically, like, you have to spend as much as you were spending during the COVID, the COVID-19 crisis in 2020. And if we see a default in Russia, it could not only be a systemic issue for those holders of Russian debt, but also for some emerging market. So definitely something that we would need to monitor going forward.
Most certainly. And it's such a varied picture as well across EM. There's a lot of stress, but there are also certain stories that are quite interesting on the upside. Brazil, for example, making its currency making a strong new high versus the US dollar here, as it signaled that strong rate hike regime. And then the commodity portfolio that Brazil offers is quite impressive, from foodstuffs to oil. And speaking of oil, just a couple of things to think about. There was a listener comment and question about what are the effect of subsidies. It's a bit of a large topic, and we've got a lot on our plate today, but just put up a couple of stories on slide 6 to remind us what these subsidies mean. What they mean is that you have the government going in and subsidizing demand that otherwise would not be there, because those actors in the economy couldn't afford that demand. And it just means it's an erosion of the credibility of the fiat currency in the end. Especially this is the case traditionally with EM currencies and EM countries that are offering too generous subsidies and their sovereign balance sheet. This has been a threat, for example, in Egypt with the rise of wheat prices. Wheat is very heavily subsidized in Egypt. Just some things to consider there. I got a couple of clips, and it shows you that they can try in various different ways, but somebody is always taking the hit. And what's the worst part of it is you sustain demand and oftentimes you reduce supply. So especially if back in the U.S. oil crisis, there was a concept of old oil versus new oil. In other words, if it was discovery or oil production that was from before the massive spike in prices during the oil crisis, then you could not charge higher prices. Therefore, there was no, there was no move to increase production from those old fields. Then you have the Italian approach, which again, it just adds it to the sovereign level, and or it prevents energy levels or energy companies from making profits that they could plow into new production, new investments to increase production going forward. There's also an example from the UK there on slide 6. So just subsidies are the worst news for the long run in terms of credibility and increasing supply and suppressing demand. And then on the with the rise in interest rates, for looking at the Forex market, the dollar, of course, responding to the strong side, but it's really selective and it's mostly concentrated in those against those currencies where rates are quite low. So we saw the euro dipping back below 110, not really that big a move considering the size of the move of the US interest rates. But if you look at dollar yen, just another big spike higher, well above 120 now. I have a chart there on slide 7. And the yen is just in an absolute tailspin across the board, minus 8.1 on a trend reading. That's very rarefied territory to have a trend strength of that level. And we are barreling into month and financial year end in Japan. Very interested to see if there's a pivot point there. As I've emphasized, Japan, with the Bank of Japan's yield cap on 10-year Japanese government bonds, any new rise in global yields means that the effect of that has to transmit into the Japanese currency, since the Japanese bond market is unable to absorb that. Okay, let's get back to some other interesting stories. We've had a couple of things, a couple of interesting developments and big U.S. names, even though there is a Chinese focus to earnings this week. Take it away, Peter.
Yeah, thank you. If we sort of start with stocks to watch today, maybe I should have put in Pinduoduo. They reported yesterday, and it's one of those e-commerce companies in China that have coming from behind. It's a smaller player, but they have grown pretty considerably, and they had better than expected earnings yesterday, but they actually missed on revenue growth and their active users, and they were subsequently punished for that. In the U.S. session after the market closed, we had Nike. They reported better than expected revenue growth. China with the positive surprise, and then there also their direct business is doing increasingly better, and that's I think is partly one of the reasons why they are able to maintain their operating margins. So the market was pretty pleased with that, sending Nike shares up a couple of percent. And then Boeing could have been a very bad session. It was down relative to the Friday's close, but it gained from the open. And the reason was that we had a Chinese commercial airplane, a Boeing 737-800 plane that crashed yesterday from midair on autopilot mode in a very dramatic fashion. Very little information have come out yet from this crash, but for the time being, the airplane type, which is one of the most popular ones in the world and a best-selling for Boeing, has been suspended for now in China, and as they investigate what really happened. And then I've highlighted U.S. financials because with all this talk from Powell and rising rates, U.S. financials have done pretty well over the past couple of weeks, in line with the rest of the market's rebound, of course. But yesterday's session, it actually came down during the session after opening higher compared to the Friday's close. And I think it seems like the market is saying, okay, we're getting high interest rates, but is, as you say, John, is the Fed trying to break the economy? Because then, medium term, that's bad for financials. So I think that's sort of I'm really curious to see how the market is really digesting all of this in today's session in U.S. financials. So it's definitely something to watch.
All right. And then on the earnings front, I was a bit confused there because I saw some little Twitter notification on Chinese results for Nike being quite poor. But your indication is that they actually, even though they did worse and their slump in China continues, as one headline I saw says, that they've actually done better than was actually feared.
Yeah, exactly. So there is clear signs of Chinese nationalism, if you want, on behalf of their domestic companies. So a company like Anta Sports, which we actually reported in the Hong Kong session, and was doing quite well in China, and they're taking market share from Nike and Adidas. So when I say they did great in China, is because they did a little bit better than what was expected by the market. So I think that there was a lot of fears going into this earnings release from Nike. What about China? What about the input cost pressures? And it seems like they dodged two bullets right there.
Right. And then an interesting name I'm always interested in this name because of the nature of its advance on the way up and that linking of its very steady growth rate and incredible valuations based on its sort of bond-like behavior. It was sort of like a bond where the coupon is increasing. And that the name I'm talking about is Adobe. And you can see the five-year performance there on slide 9. They have been in a nasty slide here. I guess a lot of that is linked not so much to the company's results going south, but more the concern about duration and rising yields, even though the long end of the curve hasn't risen all that much relative to what we've seen in the short end of the curve.
Yeah, exactly. So it's a very aggressively priced company, and that's why they have responded so dramatically to interest rates. But the valuation have come down now. So they priced around a free cash flow yield of 3%. But with the rate of change in the U.S. 10-year yield, it might, the decline in Adobe might not be ending anytime soon. So that's what we're going to focus on. But then also, it's important to note that the sell side estimates for growth have come down pretty dramatically. So if you look at the previous four quarters, they have grown plus 20% year on year. And for the quarter, this fiscal year 22, first quarter, which ended for Adobe in the end of February, so around a month ago, the analysts are only expecting a little less than 9% growth year on year. So that's a drop off from 20 to 9 in just 3 months. So this is the key number to be watching tonight, because if they smash those revenue growth estimates, then I think Adobe could be in for a rebound. So that's really the key watch here tonight.
Okay, and then we'll do some more central bank watching today. I have a couple more Fed speakers out, a couple of them voters. The Fed's Mester is out speaking late today. She was a little more cautious on the cautious side, if I recall, some time back. But of course, the conditions on the ground have changed quite a bit. So interesting to see if you're seeing these voters sort of harmonizing with what Fed Chair Powell is saying. There was at least one on the Board of Governors that recently did so. And then a number of ECB speakers as well. I'll tell you, I don't see how they really shift more hawkish relative to expectations when they've just come out saying, both Lagarde and Lane, who are out speaking today, that they expect this Q4 timeframe for a rate hike. But are you watching ECB closely? Are you expecting much from EU rates today?
Well, yes, John, and we cannot forget that also European rates, especially the Bund, is tightly correlated with US treasuries. So now that we've seen that move higher in yields in the US yesterday, European sovereigns should follow. But the chance also for Lagarde to be hawkish today is also quite big, since there has been a shift in communication in the latest ECB meeting. So nothing can be discarded at this point.
All right, we'll have to watch for that. And you can see the full list of what's going on today in terms of those central bank speakers. And for the rest of the week, that's slide 10 in today's slide deck. We're going to wrap it up here. We'll be back tomorrow with the next Saxo Market Call.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Saxo Market Call. For feedback and questions, reach out to us on Twitter @SaxoMarketCall or by email, marketcall@saxobank.com.